got so much going on. You should have been here Saturday night, right? That was the night to be here, right? Did you know that? Yeah, Jada Rinpoche, that was the night to be here. Yeah. So, I mean, it's nice you're here. And yeah, right now, you do. But so it's nice to see everyone else here. So, I'm sorry some people missed Rinpoche, but he will be back. Is this on okay? Yeah, so. Yeah, I just don't want to flip it off. Feels good, yeah. That's good, yeah. Yeah, squeeze it. Yeah, okay. So, when I think about visiting my teachers, particularly Jada Rinpoche, I think of this kind of odd association, but Johannes Brahms, of course, very wonderful composer, kind of carried on the romantic, the baton of Beethoven, so to speak. But he was very fond of kind of kitschy music, particularly Strauss waltzes, So actually he was kind of on his deathbed and he insisted on being taken to, hear a performance by the Strausses in Vienna. That's interesting, So, in the future, I encourage people, even if you think there's an obstacle to seeing the teacher, to try to see the teacher as much as possible, because we never know. We always think, oh, there'll be next time like that. So, people, there's always sometimes obstacles in meeting the teachers, when our karmic situation is this or that. Now, because of my practice, I don't have the obstacles meeting the teachers, although in the past I did have the obstacles meeting the teachers. There'd always be something like driving down to an impairment or driving down a teacher. One year, I had like 3 car accidents in a row. And then, but you use Dharma thinking and I thought that karma's come to fruition, right? Those are outer obstacles. The inner obstacles are the harder ones to overcome, right? The obstacles like doubt, distraction, like confusion, right? Like that. So those are the hard ones to overcome. And there's always, of course, some outer obstacles. But it's very interesting. The teacher tries very hard even to make the obstacles, be ameliorated. Like the Buddha was literally on his deathbed, kind of lying on his side, lying posture that way. And, this yogi came up and said, I got a question. And, he was still taking a few questions. So Ananda said, well, keep it short. His attendant, just like a good attendant here does, And he said, I'd like to take refuge and become a monk. And, Ananda kind of threw up his hands. The Buddha's dying, okay, so you're a little late. And the Buddha said, no. So I can't remember. Did anybody remember that monk's name? So that would be good research, Patty, and find out who that was. So that became the last monastic ordained like that. But whether you're on your deathbed or whether the teacher is, it's okay in Dharma, But just if you have a cold, wear a mask. But it's okay if you have a bad back, lean against the wall. So many times I've been with great teachers and, people are kind of showing up in, wheelchairs or, sometimes with great teachers like Karmapa, like Dalai Lama, like Dzogchen Rinpoche, my own teacher, it looked like lords, right? In France, people coming with, you know, like various looking not so healthy, right? So that's okay. This is a big hospital. This is a Dharma hospital. So we're not expecting everyone to be like perky, right? We're expecting, you know, we need healing, so we come. And you don't have to be real perky to receive Dharma teachings, really, because you're listening with your Buddha mind. You're not listening with the normal kind of go to lecture kind of mind, right? You're listening from the heart. So the heart never shuts down, right? So even if you're kind of feeling like nuts, then and you want to be there, then you're going to absorb something, right? You know, you're just by being there, because usually when we're nutty, we're just all up here, right? You know, like, I can't concentrate. I've got to take this exam tomorrow morning, so I don't think I ought to go to that Dharma talk because I, you know, like, blah, blah. I've got too much to think about anyway. You shouldn't be listening with this. You don't need to listen with this part to a Dharma talk. Even if it's kind of intellectual Dharma talk, you want to listen, you know, from the heart, mind, right here, right? It will go in, you know, you don't have to worry. And then sometimes hearing Dharma talks from great teachers, you come in and you're so confused, you know, you just had an argument with your partner, and then the car breaks down, and then, you know, then you forgot to feed the pet, so you have to drive back home. And by the time you arrived, you're like totally pissed off. And people think, I don't want to go to a Dharma teaching or impairment or see a great teacher when I'm totally pissed off. But that's exactly the time you should go. Like when you're fermished, when you're just messed up, when you kind of can't figure out, like, oh, I don't know. Just, you know, that's when we need Dharma friends who just kind of like, shut up, get in the car. Because then, you know, a lot of times just being in a teacher's presence, then it clears up like that. So from one point of view, of course, you don't want to go to listen to a teacher and, you know, you have, of course, negative views, or you're all kind of messed up. But right away, my first teacher, Trungpa Rinpoche, was very tantric, right? Very Mahasiddha kind of style teaching. So he said, you know, just show up if you're pissed, right? Sutra style, you've probably heard, like, you know, take a bath, be very nice when you show up. But sometimes Tantra style is like, show up. He goes, I know you're pissed, just show up, right? Does that make sense? You know, so it was right. A lot of times I was pissed at my, you know, Geshe Udon pissed at Trungpa Rinpoche, or, you know, Chodron Rinpoche, or anybody else, you know? Like, I'm not in a good mood, so I'm not going to go. But actually, that's the best time you need to go. That's the best time. You don't feel well, so... You know, of course, if you're throwing up or, you know, something like that, you know, we don't want to get people sick. But it's okay. You don't have to be, you know, Dharma's for sick people. We don't, Dharma, my teacher used to say, in America, you know, it's temples and Dharma centers are big psych hospitals, right? So it's okay to show up kind of confused. How else can we show up? You're not going to show up enlightened, so it's okay to go, I don't know, I'm here, I don't know what's going on, I don't like anybody, you know. But then we sit, and then something happens, you know, like, so some of the best teachings I've gone to is like, you know, like, Trungpa Rinpoche was really good at this, you know, he'd like be late, and you'd first show up, and like, you know, just like, hey, I'm on time, I should get, you know, a medal for that. And then, you know, like, I'm here, why isn't he here? And then, you know, half an hour would go by and we'd be doing this. And then at some point, believe it or not, you decide, well, damn, he's not showing up, so I might as well meditate. But it's amazing, back then in the 70s, you'd never think of meditating before the teacher came, right? You'd think, the show's at 7, the teacher arrives at 7, maybe there's a little bit of promo, but like that. So 2 hours later, generally after a couple of hours or an hour and a half of meditation, then you're ready to receive the teachings. But you started off in kind of this excited mode and then depressed mode and then angry mode. And then finally, it was like Kubler-Ross's kind of death thing, denial, anger, you know, depression, bargaining, acceptance. Did I get that right? Yeah, so like that. And then finally just kind of like, okay, I'm here, like that. Should we do some prayers? My voice is like shot. And I'm not, I know your voice is too. So, yeah, is your voice good? All right, you're on.
I think, we'll see.
Yeah, it's okay to do it and sound crappy. That's all right. You know.
Is that on? I only care because...
It's green. If it's green, green it's go. On. Yeah, that's good.
And it's on. Yeah. So we'll start the narrative meditations on page 3. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings and go for refuge. Teacher, foe destroyer, thus gone, fully and perfectly awakened Buddha, endowed with knowledge and good conduct, gone to bliss, knower of the world, helmsman of ordinary beings to be tamed, supreme one, teacher of all gods and men, Buddha, foe destroyer, glorious victorious one, Shakyamuni, to you I pay homage, make offerings, and go for refuge. When you, chief of humans, were born, you took seven steps on this great earth, and you said, I am supreme in this world. To you who were wise at that time, I prostrate. Completely pure body, supremely fine form, ocean of wisdom like a golden mountain, fame that blazes in the three worlds, supreme protector, to you I prostrate. Endowed with the supreme marks, a face like the stainless moon, a color like gold, to you I pay homage. The three worlds are not like you, who is free from dust. Matchless one, endowed with knowledge, to you I prostrate. Protector endowed with great compassion, omniscient teacher, field of ocean-like merits and good qualities, to the thus gone I prostrate. Through purity, free from attachment, through virtue, releases from the evil-gone realms, unique, supreme, ultimate meaning, to the Dharma that brings peace, I prostrate. From freedom, teaching the path, well abiding in the pure trainings, holy field endowed with good qualities, to the Sangha also, I prostrate. Homage to the Supreme Buddha, homage to the Dharma, homage to the great Sangha, to all three ever devout homage. To all worthy of respect, bowing with bodies as many as all realms, atoms, and all aspects, with supreme faith I pay homage. Do not commit any non-virtuous action. Accumulate virtue and goodness. Subdue your own mind. This is the teaching of the Buddha. Like a star, a mirage, a lamp, illusions, drops of dew, bubbles, dreams, lightning and clouds. Look at all conditioned phenomena as such. Due to this merit, having attained the state of the all-seeing, and thereby subduing the enemy of faults, may I liberate migrators from the ocean of existence, stirred by the waves of aging, sickness, and death. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge in the Guru. I take refuge in the Buddha. I take refuge in the Dharma. I take refuge in the Sangha. I take refuge until I am enlightened in the Buddha, the Dharma, and the Sangha. By the positive potential I create by listening to the Dharma, may I attain Buddhahood in order to benefit all sentient beings. May all sentient beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. May all sentient beings be free of suffering and the causes of suffering. May all sentient beings be inseparable from the joyful happiness that is free from suffering. May all sentient beings abide in equanimity, free from holding some close and others distant. Respectfully, I prostrate with my body, speech, and mind. I present clouds of every type of offering, actual and imagined. I confess all of my negativity accumulated since beginningless time, and rejoice in the virtuous actions of all ordinary and noble beings. Please, Buddha, remain as our guide and turn the wheel of Dharma until samsara ends. Through the merit created by myself and others, may the two bodhicittas ripen, and may I attain Buddhahood for the sake of all sentient beings. This offering I make of a precious jeweled mandala, together with other pure offerings and wealth, and the virtues we have collected throughout the three times with our body, speech, and mind. O my masters, my yidams, and the three precious jewels, I offer all to you with unwavering faith. Accepting these out of your boundless compassion, please send forth waves of your blessings. Idam Guru Ratna Mandala Kam Nirtyam. And now, together, we'll recite the Heart of the Perfection of Wisdom Sutra. I prostrate to the Arya Triple Gem. Thus did I hear at one time. The Bhagavan was dwelling on massive Vultures Mountain on Rajagriha, together with a great community of monks and a great community of bodhisattvas. At that time, the Bhagavan was absorbed in the concentration on the categories of phenomena called profound perception. Also at that time, the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara looked upon the very practice of the profound perfection of wisdom and beheld those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Then, through the power of Buddha, the Venerable Shariputra said this to the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara: how should any son of the lineage train who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom? He said that, and the Bodhisattva, Mahasattva, Arya, Avalokiteshvara said this to the Venerable Shariputra: Shariputra, any son of the lineage or daughter of the lineage who wishes to practice the activity of the profound perfection of wisdom should look upon it like this, correctly and repeatedly beholding those five aggregates also as empty of inherent nature. Form is empty, emptiness is form, emptiness is not other than form, form is also not other than emptiness. In the same way, feeling, discrimination, compositional factors, and consciousness are empty. Shariputra, likewise, all phenomena are emptiness, without characteristic, unproduced, unceased, stainless, not without stain, not deficient, not fulfilled. Shariputra, therefore, in emptiness there is no form, no feeling, no discrimination, no compositional factors, no consciousness, no eye, no ear, no nose, no tongue, no body, no mind, no visual form, no sound, no odor, no taste, no object of touch, and no phenomenon. There is no eye element, and so on, and up to and including no mind element, and no mental consciousness element. There is no ignorance, no extinction of ignorance, and so on, and up to, and including, no aging and death, and no extinction of aging and death. Similarly, there is no suffering, origination, cessation, and path. There is no attainment, and also no non-attainment. Shariputra, therefore, because there is no attainment, Bodhisattvas rely on and dwell in the perfection of wisdom, the mind without obscuration and without fear. Having completely passed beyond error, they reach the end point of nirvana. All the Buddhas who dwell in the three times also manifestly completely awaken to unsurpassable, perfect, complete enlightenment in reliance on the perfection of wisdom. Therefore, the mantra of the perfection of wisdom, the mantra of great knowledge, the unsurpassed mantra, the mantra equal to the unequaled, the mantra that thoroughly pacifies all suffering, should be known as the truth, since it is not false. The mantra, the perfection of wisdom, is declared Tayata Gate Gate Paragate Parasangate Bodhisoha. Tayata gate gate paragate parasamgate buddhi soha. Shariputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva, should train in the profound perfection of wisdom like that. Then the Bhagavan arose from that concentration and commenced Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, saying, well said, son of the lineage, it is like that. It is like that. One should practice the profound perfection of wisdom just as you have indicated. Even the Tathagatas rejoice. The Bhagavan having thus spoken, the venerable Sharavabhiputra, the Bodhisattva Mahasattva Arya Avalokiteshvara, those surrounding in their entirety, along with the world of gods, humans, asuras, and gandharvas, were overjoyed and highly praised that
spoken by the Bhagavan.
This, just last Saturday, Khyentse Jhara Rinpoche gave Bodhisattva vows, and, you know, I met with him the night before on Friday to go over what he wanted to see included. The way our Dharma practice and this tradition works is, we make a suggestion and then ask the teacher what they think, or we ask the teacher and it goes back and forth like that. A lot of times, people, it is just one way in some traditions, right? You know, the teacher says, okay, do this, do this, do this. Or in other traditions, it might be that the student just tells the teacher what they want to do and they go ahead and do it. I've had students like that, right? You know, this is what I'm going to do. And I said, well, okay, you're just asking me to bless what you're doing. Yes, that's it. Don't tell me what not to do. So that's not our tradition. Most people are studying with other teachers. Well, that's okay, you know. So in our tradition, we, you know, kind of tantric style is, you put it out first. The student kind of puts out, reveals first and say, you know, what do you think? You know, this is my experience. What do you think, right? You present something yourself, like, here I am, warts and all, what do you think? So I presented, you know, the idea of, you know, looking for a Bodhisattva ceremony text that resonated with me. And so I found a really long version by Zalpatro Rinpoche that I particularly like, and but found then a shorter Patro Rinpoche, and we went over it. You know, this Patro Rinpoche was a very famous, not just Nyingma teacher, but you know, Rime teacher, and Dalai Lama quotes him very often. But just so you know, for kind of scholarly types here, it was a little bit. Non-conformist for me to say, okay, well, we're doing Bodhisattva vows, but we're going to take Patro Rinpoche. But Rinpoche said, oh yeah, Patro Rinpoche, I've actually memorized that. This is an amazing being. You know, he goes, oh yeah, yeah. We're just going through it, and he goes, you know, so Geshe Tashi is kind of reading it, because we didn't have the Tibetan, we just have the translated, and Rinpoche is, you know, kind of matching him a line ahead of it. This is amazing. This is truly amazing. I mean, you know, just he goes, oh yeah, this is, yeah, I've kind of memorized. No, he didn't say I've memorized. He says, I've kind of memorized this, because he wouldn't be kind of saying I memorized it. He wouldn't say that. He's kind of memorized it. But then, so, like Geshe Tashi was, who can read English too, but he'd go, you know, Chokchu, Na, Zukpe, Sange, Chom Dande, Tam Chindang. And then he'd start the other next thing, Sa, Jula, and Rinpoche would just carry it from there. That's how they train in the monastery, you know. That's how they do the tests. They do the memory test. They don't say, well, tell us what you got. Let's say you memorize a whole tantra or a whole book, right? Let's say you memorize a whole book. Like, let's say you take you know, Great Expectations by Dickens, right? Okay, and then you don't start at the beginning. They don't sit there and say, well, start at the beginning, you know, my name's Pip. No. The instructor starts reading from a random place in the book, and you have to pick it up from there. It's training for real life, you see. Real life doesn't have this, like, well, we're going to tell you when your house is going to start on fire. Right? No, it's just stuff starts and you have to pick it up from there, right? That's training for real life. So a lot of times people think, oh, they're just studying, you know, scholarly things and memorizing. No, you learn how to pick things up and take it from there. It's really, truly amazing. If you didn't know this, you would just think, well, that's interesting. He seems to, like, know Patro Rinpoche's thing. And then the other thing that I added was... the Bodhisattva vows on top of the main vow, which they're kind of phrased in the negative for people that got the sheet, you know. Okay, so this is why I told Rinpoche, I said, I gave some classes on Lotus Sutra, kind of getting enthusiastic now. We'll go over the, you know, the 18 and the 46 and go over Atisha and Shantideva and Chandragoman like that, you know. Because I know this is kind of technical, but this is what you got today, Rachel, so it's okay. So just hang, right? It's not going to be, So, okay. So, like Lojong training, you know, mind training is very general. Like, you know, the Bodhisattva practice is like, you know, vow to become a Buddha to save yourself and all beings from suffering. Okay, very general, right? Then the Lojong or mind training section gets a little bit more specific. You know, like, be mindful, something like that. Pay attention. Then the point of these negative precepts are like, you know, like you're telling someone, you know, don't run across the street without looking both ways. See, they sound negative, but they're just like you'd be telling, you know, a child, like, don't just turn on the gas on the stove without seeing if the pilot light is on. I grew up with a gas stove, you know, and that was kind of fun to turn it on, and then the pilot light wouldn't go on, and then you'd throw a match. This is what, my mom was gone a lot, so I got to do stuff. Okay, so the what's called the root downfalls and secondary infractions are, like, just don't run across the street. Don't run with scissors. Don't sit, don't let a stranger give you a ride. They're not meant to be kind of like perfectionist, beat you up kind of things like that. So they assume you've already gotten the general idea, you know, wake up for yourself, be free, and help all beings. And then, you know, a little bit more specific, like how to be mindful, how to be present, how to work with negative situations. But that still doesn't tell you what to do in your life, right? And then they're the kind of little negatives, like make sure you know, have gas in the car before you leave for Reno. That's this style, you know, and don't be mean to people, or don't don't be late or something. But still, even with all the vows, the lojong, the precepts, then you still need an individual teacher because everyone's path is different. Bodhisattva thing, lojong, even the infractions don't tell you how to lead your life, what practice you should be doing, right? For that, you need a teacher that gets to know you personally. You can do general practice, but that still doesn't mean, like in your real life, like, well, should I take this job? Should I live in Sacramento? What practice should I be doing? You know, should I leave this partner or stay with this partner? Or should I, you know, go to this retreat or go to that retreat? There's nothing in here that says what you should do, like, on that journey, right? For that, you need a teacher, and what's the point of the teacher is to help you awaken your blissful wisdom mind. That's the point, because that's what you want, right? If the lights are on, you know where the pathway to the door is, right? When the lights are off, it's like being in a minefield, right? And then you do have to have a lot of rules and a lot of do's and don'ts. So we're assuming in one's training that most of our practice is a dimmer switch, you know, kind of gradually gets lighter. But to start off with, you need a lot of instruction. But the point is, when the lights are on, you don't have to say, how many steps is it till I take the door, right? You don't have to say, is there a hole on the way to the door? You just walk out. Isn't that correct? Yeah. So it's easy then. When the lights are on, you know where to sit, right? But if it was totally dark in this room, and particularly you hadn't been in this temple before, it'd be a little scary, right? Then you'd want to know, you know, this is scary. And you go, no, I'm going to tell you every inch of the way where to walk, where to turn, where to sit down, just, you know, like that. But that won't get you to primordial wisdom. That won't turn on the light. But while the light is kind of dim or off, yeah, we're going to say don't step over there. There's a cliff that's 3,000 feet deep, right? Don't run across, don't run with scissors. But when you have the wisdom mind and the light is on, you can fulfill the precepts easily, right? Because you know where to walk. Easier, like that. Buddha Dharma, with the precepts, with the vows, with the do's and don'ts, it is not a perfectionist trip. Unfortunately, sometimes people, they migrate from one perfectionist tradition. Like, let's say you grew up in a perfectionist family, like mine. You know, too. So, the motto, I like to joke, but it's not really that funny, but the motto in my family wasn't be perfect. What do you think the motto was? Even perfection isn't good enough. Ooh, yes. So, but a lot of us have that, you know, we feel like we should be perfect, but we're never good enough, we never feel we're doing enough. So, but we think we should be perfect, even though we can't be perfect. We think, like, if we have this perfectionist ideal, then we should just, you know, keep climbing and aiming for it, and that's the way to do it, you know. Even though we fall short, we kind of do that. That's not the Dharma model. I know some Dharma is kind of, in Asia, is kind of done that way, but that's actually not the tantric model we do at all. The tantra model is we're growing and nurturing what's already there. It's like a flower model or agricultural model. It's actually a human model. I mean, if you're a good parent, you don't expect your child to immediately start walking and talking, right? You educate, you train, you develop, you educate by bringing out drawing out means educate in Latin, drawing out. So we don't say, well, you know, you're 2 years old and you're not walking perfectly. I don't think you're ever going to walk. You're just not doing it perfectly. We don't do it that style, you know. So even the, when we recite perfection of wisdom, or we have, you know, it's kind of a little joke, right? It's really the wisdom where we're not worried about being perfect, so it's perfect. Isn't that so? So the model is a growth, a learning model, a healing model. So when we heal, we might have had an injury, so we can't return to the pre-injury state, but we can heal, we can, we'll still might have a scar, but we can still use our leg, right? We accommodate around it. That's healing. In other words, we heal our soul when it's been injured. Of course we have wounds, but we're healed not in the sense of having no wounds, but healed with the wounds, right? That's the Dharma model. So when we're taking these bodhisattva vows and precepts, unfortunately, sometimes people get, you know, like, I don't think I want to, you know, I don't think I want to save all beings. Actually, the vow doesn't say that in Tantra. We just say, we want to become a Buddha. We want to be liberated and free from suffering, both for ourselves and for others. Can we literally save everybody by ourselves? No, it's not a salvation religion, right? Sometimes in Zen they say that, right? Dharma gates are endless, you know, Buddha, sentient beings are numberless, I vow to save them, right? I don't know if I really like that translation because it kind of like, you know, a little too, you know, too much a burden. You know, so when the commentary is given on it, then you know, looking at the Japanese, a little bit more liberate, right? So right now, you know, I just like want to like liberate you, right? I want to liberate you, and how am I liberating you guys? I don't have to have like a demand on you. I don't have to like, you know, I'm not expecting you to be like a certain way tonight, right? See, I'm liberating all beings. I'm not taking you home and feeding you, but like I'm not laying my judgmental trips on you. Hopefully, right? So you're liberated. You don't have to, like, I'm not making a demand. You don't have to like the Dharma talk or like it here or like yourself or not saying you have to wake up. And, you know, so we're liberating our mind and others. But lots of times we have big demands on other people, right? Like, you should be like this and you should be like this. And so that's not liberating sentient beings, right? So practically we want to create the conditions where someone can become a Buddha too, right? That makes sense, but you know, we're not going to save people in the sense of like, now I have to take you all home and now I'm responsible for your karma and now that's another thing I'm carrying around in my big pack, right? The Buddhas cannot change merited karma, can they? A little test. Can Buddhas go in and change the karma? They cannot. They can't, like, can the Buddhas transfer their enlightenment to someone else? Can they do that? They cannot. Can the Buddhas just spontaneously heal someone, even if their karma isn't meant to be healed? No, they can't. What can the Buddhas do? Teach. It's a teaching model. It's a learning model. It's a growing model. Teaching means you learn, you awaken people's Buddha nature, and you balance out their conventional self and their absolute self. So when you're doing the bodhisattva vows, like, some of these are absolutely impossible to do from a conventional point of view, right? Oh, I got a copy. Oh, I don't know. We made lots of copies. I was just going to pick a few, but if someone wants to look at them, that's fine, you know. So, here's number 3. This is a tough one. Not forgiving even when others apologize. So that sounds kind of simple, but we're doing these, you know, we're not breaking these, or we're upholding these not just with our conventional self, right? We're the conventional self, whatever your name is, you're meeting your Buddha nature halfway. It's interdependent, right? So you're not thinking, if I'm thinking 18 root defaults, not praising oneself, that's a downfall, and belittling others, not sharing, you know, and all these things. Stephen Walker is not going to do all these. I'm sunk, right? So, but Lama Jinpa, with my personal self, Stephen can do it, okay? So our practice is always meet things in the middle, always interdependence. So the conventional self, just what we normally think of as just me, and our Buddha nature self, which is who we are, but we don't own, right? Just think of your conventional self as anything you think you own, right? If you really look at it, your conventional self is going to be really small if you think it through. So our Buddha nature is everything we are, but we don't own it. So, but when those two work together in harmony and balance, then you can fulfill the positive vows and, you know, avoid walking across the street without looking, getting hit by a car. You can really work these. The other reason why some of these are really tough, you know, I'm going to, you know, take some really here's a downfall. Ignoring and insulting someone who has committed any of the five heinous crimes or defiled his or her vows of individual liberation, or treating him and her with contempt. That's kind of hard to do, right? So it means, okay, somebody's in, you know, something really horrible, and it's very easy to say, well, what are you doing here? You've done something really horrible. Or just kind of, or not recognizing that they've done something horrible. It's really hard to do. You recognize that somebody's done something really horrible, and at the same time, you're not treating, you know, you're not trying to dissuade them from doing practice. You're not trying to say, well, you know, you voted for the wrong person. I don't see how you're ever going to get enlightened. Right? That's kind of hard, you know? Okay. A downfall, being addicted to frivolous talk. That's a hard one. Frivolous talk doesn't mean just, I'm just picking these, you know. Frivolous talk doesn't mean you're talking about the Kardashians or something like that. Frivolous talk doesn't mean you're wondering, like, you know, what's Meghan Markle, the Duchess, wearing today? Frivolous talk is what? Actually, yeah, I mean, gossipy, you know, is like trivial, you know, it's not moving things, your Dharma practice forward. So we can actually be talking about things that seem pretty nice, like sometimes in Buddhist settings in America and in Asia too, people are going, well, what have you been up to? And people go, well, last week I saw this and this Rinpoche, and this week I went to that impairment, and then I've been doing this, and you know, you just go on and on about yourself instead of going, well, how are you doing? I'm like, gosh, you don't look well. You know, how are you doing, right? You know, just staying with the immediate situation instead of you're just kind of, it looks like you're talking about great Dharma things, but it's just kind of like, you know, Dharma club, right? So that's frivolous. We don't do a lot of that here, probably. We just kind of, we should be asking, like, how are you doing? Okay. So the important thing is that we do it with a combination. We do it with our whole self, both our conventional self, the one that's on the driver's license, and the Buddha nature, which is the pristine wisdom mind, right? That you can't see, has no name, right? Does it have a name? Doesn't have a personal name, right? So these are 12 downfalls that are also really hard, not helping those who need assistance, avoiding the task of caring for sick people, not working to alleviate other suffering, such as the 7 types of frustrations, being blind, deaf, lame, exhausted from fatigue, depressed, abused and rebuked by others, and suffering from the hindrances to a calm and single-pointed mind. It's hard being around people that are depressed, right? I just wish like they would cheer up. But we're working with them. Not showing the Dharma way to those recklessly caught up in the affairs of this life alone. So, you know, thinking like, well, you're too busy. I won't tell you about what I'm doing dharmically. A big part of Bodhisattva practice is you go out and you work with others and you share the Dharma as much as you can. Not repaying the kindness of others. Not consoling those who have mental grief, such as that caused by separation from loved ones. Right? So we have chaplains now, right? Wonderful chaplain ceremony. So a lot of times in silly Dharma, I'm in kind of edgy mood today, so I don't mind saying silly Dharma. People, you know, if when there's a loss, people just say, well, of course, you know, they might say on compassion, like, well, of course, everything's impermanent, you know, and the Buddha said every, you know, that's not helpful, you know. So we don't say that as chaplains, you know. We are, you know, when someone's had a great loss, like recently, of course, Sangha member Heather's house like burned down in Paradise. You don't have to teach the person impermanence. They got that, okay? You know, they're not, you know, like, well, it's impermanent. You know, no, they got that. Not giving material aid to those who are in need of it. Not taking care of one's circles of disciples, such as that relatives and friends, by giving them teaching and material aid. Not acting in accordance with others' wishes. Bodhisattva practice sometimes means, like, I think this is hard practice, like sometimes just going along with people's whatever. I really respect a lot of people, you know, like students here, a lot of them really good. Like, I know it's kind of silly and I don't agree, but I'm going along with it. Isn't that nice? I mean, sometimes there are harmless things we can kind of go along with that, you know, just like, it happens all the time. And, you know, it's like, to me, like, the lovely person I'm married to will say, you know, I think we ought to turn down this street or this way. And I just, as a guy, I just know that that's the wrong way to go. But, you know, I'm not going to say anything, right? I'm just going to, like, go along, you know, and it's okay. Now I've gotten over it, you know, just so we drive a little way out of the way. So what, right? You know, just go along with other people's wishes. And the same happens from my side. You know, I'll say, let's go do this, and then it won't work out, but Sabrina went along with my wishes. Isn't that beautiful? You know? So sometimes as Lama, I ask people to do ridiculous things, you know, just to see. It's true sometimes. You know, just like, well, are you willing just to go along sometimes, you know? That's huge. It happens in the monastery a lot, by the way. You'll just ask to go get the smoke shifter or something, shoreline or something. Yeah, are you willing just kind of like, okay, all right. You had a question.
Good
Buddha days.
So that list sometimes you're just really out some days and other days.
So this is important that you're going to have to ask it all over again, Rachel. That's the rule here. It's on the piece of paper. Do not speak. without the microphone.
You heard me, didn't you?
Yeah, I did.
No, I, because in our, what I've learned so far in my spiritual growth is I have some really good Buddha days. I'm not a Buddhist, but a good Buddha days and some really bad Buddha days. I mean, where I'm not anywhere near connected like I'm supposed to be. And I don't always, and some days I'm just really right on and doing very wonderful things, and other days. So I just wondered how that fits in with all your teachings. That you recognize that we're human and
actually that's when, you know, we wouldn't say, you know, we're saying we're doing the Bodhisattva path. So that's what's really unique about the Mahayana Bodhisattva path, is where Bodhisattva means good days, bad days, all journey together. You see, so we don't split it really. You know, we're doing Bodhisattva practice, so you know, we're taking the good days and the bad days all going at the same time. So you actually, you know, if you're thinking good day, I'm having a good Buddha day, actually you're having a bad Buddha day at the same time. So, you know, like a couple of months ago, I know Susan was here, you know, and Ellen, I was talking about, like, things all move together at the same time. The mandala moves, you know, this is more Dzogchen, the mandala moves, everything moves together at the same time. It isn't like things are moving separately. It's very weird. So there's no way, you know, if you're saying you're going to have a good day, that's taking one side of the duality. You have to have a bad day. It's bad at the same time. That makes sense.
What right? I found, too, yeah. is that I'm more aware of what I'm doing. I'm more aware of whether I'm being spiritual or not.
Yes, yes.
So,
you know, so
rather than splitting it out.
Yeah, so there are days, you know, where it is going to be like this, right? It's going to, like, has that kind of variance. And but the path has that kind of, it's a broad path. So, yeah, you can kind of, like, you know, you don't always have to, like, monastic style, you have to really stay within the lines all the time. And Bodhisattva path, too, but there's a sense that we're driving on a, you know, it's a very broad highway like that. But
that's
some days,
good.
Yeah. Pardon me?
That's good.
Yeah, that is good. Let's see, last one. Not praising those who deserve praise in their good qualities. That's important, you know. And here's a very important one. This is the out of the 12 downfalls related to the ethics of helping others. Not employing physical prowess of supernatural powers if one possesses them at the time needed. So that's really important in our tradition. It is possible through our karma, through our meditation training, to you know, have various what's called siddhi, you know, accomplishments. So if you have them, then use them, right? But just having them and using them doesn't mean people automatically believe you. So that's the problem, right? You know, happens all the time. You're like, don't do this, but people do it and then they suffer. So, you know, you can't go to the lama. This is not, I'm just giving you inside scoop here. You're not supposed to go to your teacher and say, well, is that a psychic thing? You're just giving me ordinary advice. You're not supposed to do that. But people do that. Are you really see that, or is this just ordinary personal advice, right? You're not supposed to do that. You wouldn't do that in Asia. People do that here, like, Lama, did you really see something, or is that just your personal advice? I get it. In America, we ask stuff like that, but in Asia, you wouldn't. So, you know, if you see something, you should say something about it, but just for everybody, sometimes, I mean, we can still be wrong, right? and also karmic situations change. But it's always better to say something, try something, than not try it, right? Even if people think you're an idiot. You know, so there's a famous story about St. Francis that when he went to Egypt to try to talk to the Sultan, you know, the Pope's crusade was fighting the Sultan in Egypt, and they were, you know, trying to win back that part of the Nile and so forth. And Francis was trying to decide whether, you know, what to say in front of the Sultan. He said, "Well, I don't want to come across like a fool." And then his secretary, personal secretary Leo, said, "Well, that's never stopped you before." So Francis decided, you know. So we should take like a short break, and then usually we have a sitting afterwards. Is that okay? Usually I'm not sitting way up here. It's kind of like, you know, we just haven't broken the shrine down, the throne down. Yeah. So I'm going to step down and stretch my legs, and then, you know, if you're still here in 5 minutes, then we'll do a meditation, okay? So turn this off. That was compromise. One time read the gong, then other time I would do the gonti. Compromise. Okay. So that was a wonderful weekend. It was so nice to see both Geshe Tashi and Kensur Jata Rinpoche and Dr. Khalsan all at the same time. Super. Rinpoche wants me to lead more retreats. So I said, okay. So we need more retreats, yes. More means more. More is better. So, yeah, you know, maybe getting back to doing a whole day long, you know, day longs on Saturdays that we're already doing, you know, study in the morning, sitting in the afternoon, and then doing like, you know, week long or 3 day retreats, you know, could do at Lotus View something or something like that, or LMB something. Then he's very interested that we're doing Shine practice, or, you know, we call it mindfulness meditation in the mornings and evenings. So I need someone, a volunteer, because we want to start doing Thursday night. What time is starting Thursday night? 6, right? 6 o'clock, yeah. So, and then Dan is back in school, so Sue needs a partner for Wednesday at 6, right? 6, right? So Thursday at 6, too. Eden, what are you doing 6 o'clock Thursdays? Maybe. So, yeah. Maybe you'd be interested helping out like on a Thursday or something. We need 2 people. You always need 2 people to help out. So one person, you know, they support each other. And then if someone's a little sick or has to do something, ideally 3, but at least 2. You know, 3 is the best, you know, because then there's always something. I haven't seen them, you know. I think they kind of disappeared. So we'll see. We'll see. I might, Andrew and Javier might, but I haven't, they're a little soft. So, but that, they may be around too, so we wouldn't be alone. Yeah. Yeah, good. So, yeah, so, I mean, it's okay to get commitment from 3 different people. You know, that's the best. But then, like, you're here, so here you are. So, do you know anybody that wants to, is available, like, Wednesday at 6? Yeah, maybe. I don't know. Well, so think of somebody, right? Yeah, I'll do it. Yeah. Well, okay, I'll keep that in mind. That's the best way to learn the practice is to volunteer that you got to be here. And then when you got to be here, then you just do it. Like, you know, if you go, oh, I don't want to come, but you come, that's bodhisattva practice. Because the personal self, lots of times, wants to be doing something else, right? Yeah. So bodhisattva practice is the union of the personal self and our Buddha self, right? Work together. Okay. Yeah. Maybe sometime Jackie will have a meditation experience. She said, I want to share it, right? You do? Yeah, okay. You know, the most important part is a little bit, you know, like the famous book by Suzuki Roshi, Zen Mind, Beginner's Mind, right? So if you say, I'm doing the practice, here's the instructions, you know, so you need a good connection with me, you know, that's important. You know, here's how I'm trying to do it. That's the most honest thing. You know, it's like these incredible teachers that people have met, like, of course, you know, Jada Rinpoche, who says, well, I think I got it, you know, I think I got it mostly memorized, you know, or just like Kenshin Rinpoche. Like, I don't know anything, but I'm just passing on what I heard. These are incredible people, right? You know, so that's beginner's mind saying, you know, I don't know, I'll just try my best like that. You know, just be, you know, a stand-up person going, I'm trying to do, pass on what has worked. Here's what I'm how much I'm trying to do. So I'm going to pass on what I can. Here's what I have heard, here's what I've experienced, here's what I've realized. You know, that's Dharma style. So you should send me your contact information. Yeah. Okay. Let's do prayers. Thank you.
So we're on page 15. Due to the merits of these virtuous actions, may I quickly attain the state of a Guru Buddha and lead all living beings without exception into that enlightened state. May the supreme jewel bodhicitta that has not arisen arise and grow, and may that which has arisen not diminish but increase more and more. In the land encircled by snow mountains, you are the source of all happiness and good. All-powerful Chenrezig Tenzin Gyatso, please remain until samsara ends. May the teachings of the Buddha flourish, and may the upholders of the teachings remain forever. May all migrators achieve happiness, and may they fulfill all their temporary and ultimate goals. Losang, magical display of the deep awareness of all the victorious ones. Merciful giver of a stream of profound and vast instructions to the fortunate migrators, please remain always unperishing, unchanging, unfading. Avalokiteshvara, great treasure of objectless compassion. Manjushri, master of flawless wisdom. Vajrapani, destroyer of the entire host of Maras. Tsongkhapa, crown jewel of the snowy land sages. Losang Drakpa, I make request at your holy feet.